WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. The first presidential debate featuring Donald Trump and Kamala Harris is set for tonight in Philadelphia. Correspondent Jared Hill is there.
The vice president has spent the past few days doing mock debates, practicing on a stage with lights, and sparring with a Trump stand-in, former Hillary Clinton aide Felipe Reyes, who even dressed like the former president. Trump has said he doesn't need formal preparation, but he has been doing policy sessions with a small team of advisors, among them former Democratic presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard.
It'll be the first time the candidates meet in person. Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry's declared a state of emergency as Tropical Storm Francine picks up steam in the Gulf of Mexico. CBS meteorologist David Parkinson.
Tropical Storm Francine continues to get stronger as it moves closer to a landfall. Landfall likely to take place on Wednesday afternoon as a Category 2 hurricane in Louisiana near Vermilion Bay.
After the system moves inland, it's expected to spread heavy rain over parts of the Deep South. Amounts could reach up to 10 inches in Louisiana. Thousands of people have been forced from their homes in Southern California, where triple-digit heat is fueling the flames of wildfires. The worst one is raging east of L.A., in the foothills of the San Bernardino Mountains. County Fire Chief Anthony Marone.
Your local firefighters are doing all they can, both in the air and on the ground, and will quickly mobilize to contain wildfires early before they become unmanageable.
After several delays, billionaire tech entrepreneur Jared Isaacman and three others blasted off from Cape Canaveral on a SpaceX rocket today in hopes of conducting the first ever space walk by private citizens.
We wouldn't be on this journey without all 14,000 of you back at SpaceX and everyone else cheering us on. We appreciate it, and we're going to get to work now.
Palestinian officials say at least 19 people have been killed in an Israeli airstrike in southern Gaza. Reporter Linda Gradstein from Jerusalem.
Palestinians say the strike hit an area that Israel has designated as a safe zone, blasted large craters into the ground where tents sheltering displaced Gazans previously stood.
Israel says the attack targeted and killed three Hamas commanders. The Australian government, who wants to set a minimum age as old as 16 to use social media platforms like TikTok, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese.
I want them to have real experiences with real people.
He says he also wants to keep kids safe. Dow futures down 11. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Two new polls show a tight presidential race in Wisconsin. Terry Bell reports.
The CBS News YouGov poll finds 51% of likely voters favor Kamala Harris, while 49% back Donald Trump. Meanwhile, consulting firm Platform Communications finds Harris leading Trump with likely Wisconsin voters 48% to 45%. I'm Terry Bell.
Both polls put Harris's lead inside the margin of error. Democratic vice presidential nominee Tim Walz returns to Wisconsin later this week. Walz will appear at different political events in Wausau on Friday night, then stump in Superior on Saturday afternoon. Walz spoke at Milwaukee's Labor Fest on Labor Day. Donald Trump spoke to a rally in central Wisconsin over the weekend. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
The Packers will have to get by without QB1. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with Sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. Jordan Love is expected to miss 3 to 6 weeks with an MCL sprain, and head coach Matt LaFleur says that rumors of the Packers looking for another quarterback are unfounded.
Despite reports, it's crazy to me, like, how people come up with some of these things, and I think you're always you explore every possibility, but at no point in time did we ever have any discussions with anybody.
On Sunday, it will be the Green Bay Packers taking on the Indianapolis Colts as each team seeks its first victory. Wisconsin football plays Alabama this week, and head coach Luke Fickell says that they're the best program in college football.
Over the last 20 years, who's been the best team in college football? And there's no doubt it's been Alabama. So regardless of where they are at this moment, this is as good a football team that there is in the country and has been for a really, really long time. And
kickoff is at 11 a.m. Saturday. And tonight, the Brewers begin a six-game road trip in San Francisco. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska for Civic Media Sports.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
We could catch an isolated sprinkle or two at some point today. Otherwise, partly cloudy, a little breezy with a high in the low 80s. Tonight, partly cloudy, upper 50s to low 60s. And then tomorrow, it'll be partly cloudy, not as breezy with a high in the low to mid 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 60.
Jane Mattner and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, she is running in Wisconsin's 18th Senate District. Kristen Alfheim joins us at 11:06. We'll hear what she's hearing about on the campaign trail. Don't miss it.
Mattner on air, weekday mornings at 10. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here across the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 7:06 on this Tuesday morning, September 10th. 8 weeks to go until the election. Nice to have you here up north. Coming up this hour, we're going to talk to our friend Hans Breitenmoser. He's a dairy farmer up in Lincoln County near Merrill. We're going to talk more about farming itself rather than some of the usual economic and political issues that impact the rural economy. And things, if you aren't a farmer, if you don't have a farm background, you might be interested in learning something very foundational about farming, maybe something that doesn't appeal to you, but is very necessary if handled properly. And of course, we're talking about fertilizer, or at least another word for it. And Hans will tell us more about that coming up later this hour. You can call or text the show at 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. You can use the Civic Media app to call us or text us as well. On the text line, Joshua from Wausau asked, will they be fact-checking this time, referring to the moderators of the debate? And the short answer is that I don't know with certainty. I have heard that they will not necessarily be fact-checking in real time. And I will also say that when you have Donald Trump there just spewing one lie after the other, you can't fact check it fast enough, because by the time he's finished saying three things and you're saying, well, Mr. President, actually it's this, and he starts arguing with you, and you never get to the second or the third one. And so fact checking in real time is very, very tough. The only way you could truly do it, and I'm not making excuses for it, but the only way you could truly do it would be to cut off their mic every single time and say, I'm sorry, Mr. President, I'm sorry, Madam Vice President, but here's what the facts show, and then turn their mic back on. And again, you kind of get away from, you know, the debate itself and answering the questions. Should we even have them at all at this point? Should we just have these very tough interviews with them instead? That's for other people to say. But if you want to tune in to the debate tonight between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump, 7:30 across the Civic Media Radio Network for special coverage anchored by Terry Bell and Todd Alba, with a debate that starts at 8 o'clock. And, of course, we'll have plenty of coverage here on Up North News Radio tomorrow morning starting at 6 a.m. Brittany Merlot is off today. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. Partly cloudy, light fog, and 50 degrees. I had some mowing jobs yesterday. The weather was beautiful. I've got mowing jobs in the Wittenberg area today. Days are getting shorter. Sunrise at 6:30, sunset at 7:15. And as far as the temperatures around Wisconsin, bus stop temperatures at 7 a.m., it is 60 up here in Chippewa Falls, 57 in Hayward, 55 in Park Falls. Wausau's at 53, Green Bay 58, La Crosse already at 62, Wisconsin Rapids 55, Oshkosh at 57, Madison at 57, and Waukesha is at 52 degrees right now. Over in the comment section as well on Facebook, listening from the last segment, Rob wishes us all a happy TV dinner day. He says he loves the lasagna TV dinner. I guess, Greg, when we now think of these instant meals that you can make in the microwave, and I don't know, when I think of the TV dinner, I think of the old-fashioned stick it in the oven. It's on an aluminum tray. It's covered in aluminum foil. I can't tell you the last time I had one of those. I just know that I couldn't get enough of the Salisbury steak, the old Swanson TV dinners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, those meat. Probably because the meat patties, I don't know much about the content, except that it was probably 40% salt. You know, it was just really delicious that way for a stupid little kid like me. But I'm not going to say I miss the old TV dinners, but they were kind of a treat, something different when you got to have them back in the day.
I mean, I don't remember having a TV dinner per se. I remember I can't remember who made it. Maybe it was, I don't know who was, but did the Salisbury steak family pack dinner where it had eight of them in there. And I remember that. But I don't remember ever doing the traditional TV dinner, like a hungry man.
No, that was definitely, it had a very defined time from whatever, like the late 50s till maybe the early 80s at best. I remember the Swanson chicken dinners where you'd eat the chicken, but if you're having like a drumstick or something, and you'd be holding that bone, it'd be like lava hot because it came right out of the oven. So you kind of had to wait to have that one. Happy TV dinner day.
It had to be the introduction to like, well, how does everything stay so fresh? Chemicals.
The answer to everything, yes. And Alicia Saunders writes in, Banquet. Yes, Banquet had all kinds of good little TV dinners back in the day as well. Brian writes in on Facebook, I like the idea of a time-checked time delay. I think he means a fact-checked time delay, just long enough to allow for floating lie emojis coming from his mouth. I'm sure talking about Trump. I've said this before. I loved the old pop-up videos from VH1.
The little bubble pop-up. Gosh. Yes.
I would love, again, not everything has to be live. Yeah. It just doesn't. Or you can run it live, fine. But just, I would then tell people, hey, guess what? Come back here 24 hours from now or whatever, and we're gonna re-rack this. We're going to play it again, but with pop-up bubbles that are going to tell you, that's going to fact check these folks, or even stop the tape if we have to and explain what's going on. I would love that. Now, I know the TV execs would be like, nobody's going to watch a debate two nights in a row or whatever. Fine. I'd be like, I don't want it live. Put it on your network live.
Yeah.
Just let me run it the next night, annotated, fact checked, footnoted, whatever the case may be. I don't want reactions. I don't want panels with their little dials. You know, I'm not worried about the vibe or your feelings. I'm talking about facts.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that on a delay. Brian, that is a great point.
I'm just wondering if he'll be able to help himself tonight, because he's been recently so absolutely hostile towards ABC. The fact that he agreed to be in a debate on ABC, I think, is amazing. But we'll see how he treats, because David, I don't know if you've ever watched David Muir do the news. There's no like wink, nudge,
no
humor, anything. He one arm up on the desk, he's reading the news, and then the news is done. Good night. I'm David. David Muir. Have a wonderful evening. That's it.
And I will wonder how he does that way as essentially a moderator / interviewer.
Yeah.
Because will he get rattled?
Yeah.
Will he be a very calm presence of saying, I'm sorry, but let me ask the question again. You know, and Trump, of course, is just that's just inoculating himself so that when he is fact checked and everything, he can blame ABC, because, of course, nothing's ever his fault.
Never.
He never gets anything wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
I think one of the reasons why people were so angry with CNN was because they were so openly fact-checking him on a regular basis and reporting on him and saying how he, you know, so the fact you, all right, he's in your house now, say something. But ABC, David Muir doesn't do that. He reports the news. So if he's more of a standalone mediator, a moderator on this, then I think for me, I'm like, well, that's what his job is tonight. But CNN, like, you guys had him in your house. Why didn't you check him?
So right.
It might yeah, be, it I was, don't know if it'll be different or not.
It was such a classic case of, you know, trash talking somebody and holding somebody to account. And then when they get to your door, it's like, oh, hi, yeah. Come on in.
You know, Here's my lunch money.
Yes, right. So we'll see how ABC does. Lindsay Davis is the other moderator. She anchors the Sunday night news on the network. From what I can tell, I think she might be the one who's going to try to be more of the fact checker, try to hold people to account. Mm-hmm. But again, we'll see. And we'll see where the level of fact checking is.
Yeah.
Because, again, from the first debate, while Biden was amply criticized and often fairly for some of his responses, you know, there's been other times where with like Kamala Harris's convention acceptance speech, it was, hey, we fact check this. And, you know, she got these two statistics wrong or something to try to look equal compared to everything that, you know, Trump was spewing out. And so if they're working too hard to be even handed in their fact checking, that's going to look bad as well. Alicia writes on Facebook or on YouTube, rather, any bets on Trump mentioning schools sending kids for gender affirming surgery tonight? I doubt it. I doubt that he'll try the really brazen lies like surgery in school or the abortion after birth thing, which is known as murder, because he's going to get nailed tonight if he goes for anything that obvious, I believe. But, again, we won't know until we see how either the moderators or Vice President Harris reacts to these things. I will say, again, for saying something that is so disgustingly, apparently, obviously a lie, it is serious, but it also has gotten such a reaction on social media. I saw some teachers going back and forth on, when do you squeeze in your gender affirming surgeries? And another teacher responds, oh, it's only on Fridays, you know, because we've got the Wiccan ceremonies on Thursdays and everything else. So, and now you've got Trump making noise online that maybe Kamala Harris will be replaced by Joe Biden, that Joe Biden's going to come back, which I almost wonder if he's clearing a path to try to replace J.D. Vance as his running mate. Tony writes in from Ashland on YouTube, I'm curious, who's going to be the next GOP nominee after the debate? I mean, that's what we're doing this cycle, right? Two candidates enter a debate and only one leaves. Could be.
Trump just wants to run against Biden again. He just wants that so bad.
I know.
He just wants his buddy.
Yeah, his buddy. And to which the American public's like, no. Can we please move on? And that's exactly what we will be looking to do. The Brewers were off last night, heading toward San Francisco, where they open up a series over the next three nights. The first pitch will be at 8:40 in San Francisco, pregame at 8:10. On WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, WISS in Oshkosh. Late baseball all this week. Games Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night at 8:40. And then again, I should say 8:45. And then Arizona at 8:40 on Friday as they head there for a weekend series here in these final 3 weeks of the season. Hans Breitenmoser coming up at 7:30. We'll unpack some more of the headlines after this. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Tuesday morning, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on air.
It's 2024 and Worthington, Minnesota continues to shine. We've expanded so many things. It's a time of growth. We've expanded recreation activities with our indoor ice arena, our indoor turf rec center and playground, and our outdoor water park, Waterworld, is ready for another season. Our schools have expanded, and so has our industry. We're continuing to expand our population also, with lots ready to build on Glenwood Heights. So let's grow together in Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look.
People across Wisconsin are enjoying the rewards, stability, and flexibility of a career in healthcare. Why not you? WIS Caregiver Careers can get you started as a certified direct care professional. You'll learn the skills you need to make life better for older adults or people with a disability. All training is free and online, plus earn $500 in bonuses. Start your new career. Sign up today at WISCaregiverCDCP.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we say
the Beatles' Revolver album was number one on this day in 1966. Tomorrow on the program, we will have Congressman Mark Pocan joining us, along with Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro and Todd Alba. We'll talk about the conveniently named Todd Alba radio show. That's all coming up. I wanted to share a news item from Marathon County. This is from the Wausau Pilot and Review. It's from a couple of days back. I don't believe there have been new developments since, but I've been meaning to share this, and I want to pass this along. It's about the child care crisis and who's trying to address it and making the resources available to do so. According to the outlet, a Marathon County committee on Thursday of last week approved the use of $200,000 in ARPA funds. That's the American Rescue Plan Act. Approved transferring $200,000 in ARPA funds to pay for a child care training program to address the shortage of qualified professionals across Marathon County. Of the amount paid to the agency, $50,000 will cover the cost of foundational training for 30 individuals under a child care foundational training scholarship program. And then the rest of the money will be an incentive for participating employers. The incentive offers a $5,000 stipend to employers for each person who graduates from the child care training program. Employers must also guarantee job placement for those who complete the training. And I like that it is a local initiative. Don't be waiting on the legislature. Don't be waiting on Congress. They have both shown that there is just too much gridlock and dysfunction there. But I do worry about gridlock as well once this gets to the full Marathon County Board, which has had more than its share of division over the years, shall we say. This is not something that should be considered partisan, but unfortunately, I think that there will be people from very conservative circles that will continue to either deny the existence of a child care crisis, or who will say, well, you know, parents should just stay at home. And of course, then they wonder, well, what are we going to do about the labor shortage? I guess we could bring in, you know, more immigrants. And of course, their answer would be, oh, no, we need to deport all the immigrants that we already have. And apparently, the labor shortage just somehow magically goes away instead of getting infinitely worse. So I certainly hope that in Marathon County, they consider using some of these pandemic relief funds to take care of a very real, a very substantial problem in Marathon County and around Wisconsin and around the country, and that's addressing the shortage of affordable daycare. Contrast that with the emphasis being placed instead by many Republicans on the issue of immigration and migrants and trying to gin up fear and perhaps even violence against immigrants by, again, using violent imagery and by taking isolated incidents and making the most of them, putting them in front of the cameras as often as possible, which is what Derek Van Orden did on Monday in a virtual press conference. This from Henry Redman in the Wisconsin Examiner over at wisconsinexaminer.com. saying that Van Orden, at a virtual press conference Monday afternoon, used the arrest of a Venezuelan immigrant for a violent attack on a woman and child as a symbol of what he claimed is rampant criminality among immigrants across the country, and then went on to blame that on President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. And the story notes that police in Prairie du Chien did arrest a 26-year-old man after reports of a physical altercation. He was charged with domestic disorderly conduct, domestic battery, physical abuse to a child, second-degree sexual assault. He had warrants out in Dane County as well. He's suspected of having gang ties. At the press conference, the Prairie du Chien police chief said the incident's brutality was shocking. And then Van Orden went on to give remarks about the Biden administration and calling all of this unforgivable. And it comes as former President Donald Trump spent time in Mosinee last weekend, focused again on migrants and violence and calling for mass deportations, and even saying in the day or two prior that, you know, the roundup of immigrants could get to be bloody. So again, just raising the bar on public expectations of violence. And while this one particular case is tragic and very real, and that there are other incidents as well, I can't help but wonder, where was Derek Van Orden, and where was this law enforcement officer and other law enforcement officers? Where were the press conferences in 2012 for this is the year I've got statistics for, when there were 28,729 domestic violent incidents that were referred to district attorneys across Wisconsin? In a single day in 2014, Wisconsin domestic violence programs provided services to 1,949 victims in a single day. And on that same day, another 367 requests for services went unmet due to a lack of resources. These statistics on Wisconsin from the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. I am not in any way minimizing any of these. I'm simply asking, where was Derek Van Orden, and where were these press conferences for the other 28,728 domestic violence cases? Do every one of them deserve a press conference? Do every one of them deserve a police chief speaking at a congressional candidate's press conference? Or might we have a problem with proportion control? Because that's what we're into right now. We're in a campaign, and we're in a season where any one thing is going to be blown up to make a point, which does not negate the importance of that point. But again, it's about putting it in perspective. Another example would be voter fraud, where, again, from Donald Trump on down, we hear about election integrity. Derek Van Orden was at a quote-unquote election integrity training last week. And the Supreme Court, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, is taking up a couple of cases. They said yesterday they would hear a case brought by a conservative activist who is seeking records in an effort to find ineligible voters. And the court also is scheduled to hear arguments today in a case by Republicans who want to bar the use of mobile voting vans in Wisconsin. Now, again, voter fraud is very serious when it is committed, but it is committed in numbers almost too small to be measured from a presidential election standpoint. And frankly, I've yet to see anything that indicates that fraud or a number of mistakes on absentee ballots would be enough to swing an election. And yet, if you continue to focus on it, rather than on, you know, policies that would address things like the child care issue, well, then you hope to win elections and get in power, and you may or may not do something about this that may or may not be helpful. So remember that again at tonight's presidential debate, and from Derek Van Orden on down the ballot, as to who is talking about things from the perspective of fear and who is talking about things in perspective of engaging in solutions that have an impact on your life. Hans Breitenmeiser joins us next. You're up north.
Go to and see a green. See a green. In our yellow. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Here's a question to consider. What insurance coverage does your township have? I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news for a Tuesday. You know, if you stop and think about it, if your township has any kind of firefighting force, maybe an ambulance service, those are items that need insurance. And now with the upcoming election, there's another element of insurance to consider. We'll talk more about that in just a moment.
Whether it's finally getting that blue ribbon or enjoying too many carnival rides, we all have memories of the fair. Here's your chance to share those stories in our Everybody Has a Fair Story contest. The Midwest Farm Report is teaming up with the Wisconsin Association of Fairs as they look for the grand champion fair story. Enter the Fair Story contest for a chance to win a cash prize at MidwestFarmReport.com.
Dan Lowndes is the managing attorney with Statewide Services. That's a division of Rural Mutual Insurance. And he said one conversation he's having with towns right now, are you prepared for the upcoming elections?
I expect a lot of litigation regarding elections. And there's, again, there's no injury. Nobody got injured. No property got injured. But you have that extra layer of coverage, that extension of coverage that we could come in and we could hire an attorney who is an expert in elections to help this out. I think that area of law, you'd have to find the right attorney to defend it. Not your run-of-the-mill attorney is going to know about it. Wisconsin election law, and we'll be able to find those experts for it.
Dan Lowndes, an attorney himself and also the managing attorney with Statewide Services, a division of Rural Mutual Insurance. He said in Wisconsin, we've got somewhere in the neighborhood of about 1,100 townships, all of which are going to face those challenges coming up this fall.
Curious about how to eliminate weeds in organic vegetable farming? Get answers at the Oats Organic Weed Control Workshop, co-hosted with Marble Seed on September 19th in Athens, Wisconsin. Farm owner Cad Becker and organic weed control expert Sam Tilton will guide participants through the many vegetable weeding tool options available. You'll tour the farm learning about weed ecology and how to adjust your approach to match field conditions. Visit organicagronomy.org to register and secure your spot today.
And the warm, dry weather that we're going to experience this week around Wisconsin is good news for our crops. As of Sunday across the state, 9% of our corn silage had already been harvested. Our corn crop rated 64% good to excellent. Same situation with soybeans. Right now, about 62% of that crop is called good to excellent. Third cutting of alfalfa was about 96% complete. And 42% of our potato harvest has already been done. That's a quick update on what's happening in food news for a Tuesday. More at MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
We could catch an isolated sprinkle or two at some point today, otherwise partly cloudy, a little breezy with a high in the low 80s. Tonight, partly cloudy, upper 50s to low 60s. And then tomorrow, it'll be partly cloudy, not as breezy, with a high in the low to mid 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 60.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Today's U.S. Bowling League Day. I am not in a bowling league. I think that would actually be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I do like to bowl. But
you got the bowling shirt going on tonight there, Pete.
I do have the bowling shirt. In case the game breaks out, I'm ready. Because I was raised, I'm a street bowler, Chris. I'm ready in case a game breaks out. It could happen.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome author, comedian Roger Rittenhouse, who will discuss his new book, Big Techs, and Tim Sowers from the Overture Center in Madison drops by to discuss their upcoming slate.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
7:34 on Up North News Radio. This is National Suicide Prevention Day, a day to remember that there's never a bad time to ask for help. There's never a bad time to offer help. Every year, more than 900 people die by suicide in Wisconsin, many of them men between the ages of 25 and 44. And that if you or someone you know needs help or just wants to talk, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 988. There is more about this in today's newsletter. You can get that over at upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the top banner and learn more. On the Up North News social media feeds today, you can learn more about the Wisconsin athletes who have been competing and winning medals at the Paralympics in Paris. And there's also not just your typical corn maze, one of the largest corn mazes you might ever find. And again, look in our newsletter and on social media for more about one of those seasonal attractions. And it is the attraction of the farm that takes us to our biweekly visit with Lincoln County dairy farmer, Hans Breitenmoser. Hans, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm well. How are you?
Good. Have you ever created or been part of the creation of a corn maze?
No.
Is it, are there any?
I've got enough just trying to find my way out of them.
I wonder about that. And we'll have to get somebody on the show one of these times to talk about it, because I mean, I would assume you're planting that field with the intention that that's what it's going to be used for. But then how do you then harvest what's there when you're making the maize? I'm sure it's all a thing, but it's not a thing on the Breitenmoser farm.
No.
What is a thing on the Breitenmoser farm and all sorts of other dairy farms, anything with livestock out there, is the subject of today's visit. And it is extremely basic and foundational. It's not your typical, you know, politics, policy, the economy, or anything like that. And it was prompted by an article in the Wisconsin State Farmer newspaper, which is put together by the, I still call it Gannett, but the folks who put together the Journal Sentinel and all those other websites. And it's all about farmers constantly learning about the most ecologically friendly ways to add nutrients to the soil to help crops grow. And of course, nutrients is just a very polite way of saying manure, or BS for letters that we can't spell out for everybody. But, you know, every farm has manure and every farm has a way to use it or abuse it. And so I thought it would be great to, you know, just kind of learn more about that from your standpoint, because you've heard it both ways. You've heard people passing by farms going, ew, it stinks. And then you've had other people go, that's the smell of money. And, you know, which to an extent is true. But again, you can quite literally have too much of a good thing. So we wanted to just help people understand kind of the basics. Welcome to Manure 101. Hans, the first question I think any non-farmer asks is, how do you do it? How do you work with a product that we all just consider flat out waste, but you actually have to, it actually is a useful tool for you.
Well, I guess I'm used to it, you know, so I don't know that I smell it that much anymore, but there are ways to minimize the odor, and that has to do with how you, you know, there's products that you can treat the manure with so that it helps keep the nitrogen in the soil, and rather than volatilizing, and that's kind of the smell that you smell. But yeah, you're right, Pat. It's a very, very important resource to us here in Wisconsin. And I think the other thing to remember is that that nutrient rich product, by putting that in the soil, you can grow all sorts of crops that otherwise might need some fertilizer that might have to be brought in from as far away as Russia. So we want to minimize the amount of fertilizer that we're using. And a good way to do that is to manage our manure properly.
Yeah, it's a natural fertilizer rather than a chemical one. You've got your nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, other things like that. That I remember as a city kid, and I don't know that I'd met Cher yet, so I don't know that I'd married into a dairy farm family, but doing or being given a story about nutrient management, and I thought it was about like, you know, putting nutrients in the milk, you know, or something like that. It's like, no, nutrient management is a way of saying spreading manure in such a way that you're actually putting nutrients back into the soil. And so let's look at the other end of the equation here, Hans, about too much of a good thing or bad management of it. And I mean, before we even get to factory farms and things like that, there's all kinds of ways for an individual farmer to be bad at handling manure, right?
Oh, absolutely. And while there should be legitimate concerns about really, really big farms simply because there's the amount of manure that one is dealing with is larger and therefore, you know, should be under scrutiny and more scrutiny from that standpoint, because the risk of doing something wrong has a greater impact. It's not that terribly size specific, because if you've got 100 cows and you're managing your manure improperly, that's definitely going to have an impact on the environment. So yeah, there's ways that we can do things correctly and ways that we can do them incorrectly. And the over application of manure, whether it's surface applied or injected, is going to have an impact on surface water and groundwater. But the appropriate application is going to, again, take a nutrient-rich product that is going to turn around and help grow the crops that we end up feeding the cows with. So it becomes a nice circle.
It does. But can you tell folks about winter? Because there's obviously times when the ground is frozen, and spreading it would not be a good thing. And that sometimes is an area that is really tricky for farmers because you can't control the weather.
Yeah, for sure. And so that's where we, again, you know, get into some struggles the larger the farms get, because, yes, we don't want to apply manure on frozen ground if we can absolutely help it, because it's inability to soak in. And so now it's sitting on the surface waiting for, you know, the ability to get into the ground or run off in a big rain or snow event. So what we do is we store that manure over the winter time, because this is Wisconsin and the ground will normally freeze over the winter time. And so the manure has to be stored until spring at such time that we can get it out and put it, you know, out there in front of the corn plantings and so forth.
When we talk about storage, then it reminds me that when we've talked about renewable energy and things like that, we talk about, you know, methane, you know, and cow farts and all of that. But there's been this talk about something called anaerobic digesters. Yep. And that, is there a possibility that that the manure of tomorrow can actually serve some kind of an even greater purpose in providing energy? Is that something that's still a lot of talk, or is that something that actually has potential to take root, if you will?
That's definitely taking root, and it's becoming more of a reality all the time. Now, again, public policy has a role to play, certainly, because as we, again, in Wisconsin, we don't produce any fossil fuel. In my estimation, public policy would really try and promote the use of methane, because we have so many dairy cows and because of the way we have to confine them in the wintertime. There is an opportunity for a lot of energy production from methane. Historically, those operations would take that methane and run it through a genset and produce electricity, put the electricity onto the grid, and also, of course, use it for their own farms. But more recently, that gas is getting cleaned up to the point where it can be put on natural gas pipelines and go on to the natural gas pipeline grid. And that seems to be, there's more and more of that happening as well. So that's really exciting, because we do, again, have the opportunity in rural Wisconsin to produce the energy that we need, to produce the energy that's needed in the urban areas, and to do so in a far more environmentally friendly way than continuing to burn fossil fuels. So it's just a win-win all the way around.
I know that there is a what I'd call a mega farm just down the road from me here, and it's interesting to see the way that they've got it set up, that they're flaring off, you know, the gas from there, because they have that potential It just tells when you see gas being flared off like that, that just tells me, well, there is the potential to put that to work and to do more with it. We're talking to Hans Breitenmoser, a Lincoln County dairy farmer, a bit about, well, manure, because I figure if we only talk about BS in terms of the election campaigns, that gets old. And sometimes we have to go back to root causes of these things.
Well, when you said you wanted to talk about BS today, I assumed you meant Trump's visit to Mozanie. But I'm glad we're talking about a more positive, you know, right. Asset than a liability.
Exactly. Yes. So when we look at, you know, farms are getting larger and larger, and there are fewer and fewer of them. So they, you know, as each farm gets bigger, and so I mean, if you're going to get that much more. You have to have it cover more space. And I guess what I wonder is whether I'm, say, getting the talking point right here. When I say, well, look, consider these to be, at whatever level that is, factory farms. And I don't know if that's at 500 cows, 1,000 cows, whatever. But at some point, it's a factory farm. And like any factory, you have to have a robust process for taking care of your, you know, potential waste, whether it's manure or any factory and the things that it puts out. But Hans, I know that once we get to talking about the rules for factory farms, we suddenly get pushback from certain circles that say, oh, you're interfering in farming, you're interfering in the freedom to farm, and farmers can police themselves, and you actually have, in this case, Republicans in the legislature trying to make it harder for local units of government to regulate just how much manure, how much waste a factory farm can put out. And that sounds to me like it's still very much an active topic at both the state and local levels in Wisconsin. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, I would definitely say so. And it is an interesting dynamic, because as farms have grown larger, obviously their presence in the neighborhood is more noticed, right? I mean, when there was 100 cows on a dairy farm, it didn't matter which way the wind was blowing, that farm isn't going to smell as much as if there's 10,000 cows. That's just a fact of having that many cows. And, you know, I was in local government for 10 years on the county board, and so I've got a fairly strong bent that says that local units of government should have something to say with regard to what comes into their neighborhood and so forth. I just think that's important, because you're talking about house values and so forth and so on. So people at the local level should have have a say in what goes on in their backyard, for sure. But when it comes to manure management, though, the other thing that needs to be remembered is that we should also try and base our rules and regulations in good science. And there's no reason why a large dairy can't do a good job in applying their manure, but certainly they need to be regulated, because, as I mentioned earlier, the impact, if something is done improperly, is greater because of the sheer volume of manure that you're dealing with. So that's why CAFOs are under more scrutiny than anything less than CAFO sized.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you screw it up and there is that big spill, I mean, you do such damage to the local water there. David is calling in from San Francisco with a question about methane and energy production. David, thanks for calling in. Good morning.
Oh, yeah, morning. Yeah, it's funny. I was listening to a farm station down in Kansas a while back, and they were talking about the stench. And this woman called up and claimed that she could smell a thing, a certain farm, if you want to call it a farm, 75 miles away. So now this was in a drought year, but 75 miles away, yeah, your guess is right about the utter volume. I was going to raise two different things. One, the modern farm is usually a corporate one, and it's kind of a libertarian fakery to claim that they're farms anymore when they're in fact monstrous corporations, and then they hire a guy and call him a farmer, and the production scale is far out of his league. You know, you can't deal with 20,000 cows as one farmer.
There's only the one farmer there, exactly. It's a great point, David. I'm up against a break, though. I appreciate you making the point. Hans, anything you want to add quickly to that?
Well, it is the fact that there are corporate farms, but in Wisconsin, we still have mostly family-owned farms. Some of them are very, very big, so I think we have to focus sort of on the size. And there's a lot of moving parts with regard to the ownership and things like that. But most of the farms here in Wisconsin are still of that family farm-owned nature.
All right. Hans Breitenmoser giving us a little Manure 101. Thank you so much for that. Have a great day.
Yep, you too. Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to Chad Holmes coming up after this. You're up north.
I ain't gonna work for Maggie
Paul. 93.5 The Tap.
Most of us can agree everyone deserves the right to make their own medical decisions. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, we have leaders like Vice President Kamala Harris who are standing up for our rights to make our own medical decisions and protect abortion rights. As Vice President, Kamala Harris helped lead the administration's efforts to protect abortion rights after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Vice President Harris has worked to defend access to emergency medical care and support the ability to travel for reproductive care. She's fought for access to high-quality, affordable contraception and strengthened reproductive health privacy. Vice President Harris has defended our rights and freedoms against right-wing extremists who want the government to make medical decisions for us. She's a champion for our rights. Visit www.abwt.org/Kamala and tell Vice President Harris, keep fighting for our freedom to make our own medical decisions. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
That's the sound that tells you the Chad Holmes radio show is about to get started on Bull Falls Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you can't listen in the Wausau area, then head over to the Civic Media app and listen over there. Chad joins us now with a little preview. How you doing this morning?
I was doing great until a little while ago. I was walking from the parking ramp over here to the radio station, and I'm walking, and I realized my shirt was inside out. So
we're getting to that time of year where we're getting dressed in the dark or we're getting a little discombobulated. Yep. No, it definitely happens.
This shirt did not, it wasn't obvious, but then yes. I looked and I realized, oh, let's get into my office real fast. Make sure before I talk to Kreitlow.
But there's also that awkward moment when you realize somebody's got something inside out or their fly's down or whatever. It's like, oh, do I say something? Do I just let it go? Will somebody else call it out? And thankfully you caught that on your own. Greg is shaking his head, wagging his finger at me.
Unless absolutely impossible, you always pull them to the side and say, hey, don't mean to be weird. Put your flies down. And then you just walk away. You let them know. That's it. Because you be good Samaritan.
There you go.
It's good. It's good to, you know, to say it, then walk away, not say it, and then ask for their phone number. That would be weird.
Okay.
another edition of Tips from Chad.
Yes. Here's from.
I'm not a morning person, so my filter's completely gone when I talk to
from Tony, writing on YouTube. What did Chad say to Governor Tim Walz that was so impactful that now Walz is going to visit Wausau in person this Friday? Because if folks missed it, you had Governor Walz as a guest on your show recently.
Yeah. Last Friday it aired. And at the very end of the discussion, I said, hey, you know, if you come to Wausau, I would love to be able to talk to you again, have you stop on by. And in fact, unfortunately, I heard that apparently it's Friday night, but I want to try to drag him over to Tom Field because he could meet a lot of people over at the high school football game between a couple of rivals from the city here, Everest and West. So
I could, and
actually, I have a meeting with a rep from the Harris Walz campaign coming up at 10 after my show. So I might be dropping a few hints that maybe, you know, if he really wants to have a real impact on his visit here to Wausau, there's one place to be, and then he can call the game with me, which would be better. You know, I can get the defensive, you know, mindset of this guy who took a Mankato West over to help them to win a state championship.
Now, I'm just going to say, to temper expectations, that, you know, the Secret Service is not really fond of doing sweeps of football stadiums and everything else. Now, if I would say rather than being in the big crowd there that isn't being scanned like at a rally, I think it would be super cool if they found a way to sneak him into the booth with you. You know, that would be on par with, you know, the old Howard Cosell Monday Night Football, where you never know what celebrity is going to be coming into the booth next. That would be awesome.
It's unfortunate that the only way to get to the booth is to go through the mass of humanity that is.
Yeah, see, that's just maybe...
And it's also the smallest booth you can imagine. It's hardly enough room for me in my little area, let alone to get Governor Walz and a bunch of Secret Service agents around him as well. But a boy can dream. That's all I'll
say. Of course. You know? Nothing wrong with that. Well, again, if nothing else, you should maybe you could find a way to meet him at, you know, beforehand at a Culver's, since I think the thing that got the most traction out of your interview was asking him his favorite Culver's order.
I wish it was not that, but I guess maybe, I mean, I tell you, I don't want that to be the greatest, you know, impact of the, I thought the first three questions are pretty darn good, okay? The fourth one gets all the attention. But the
of course it does.
I thought we're pretty darn good themselves, so, but no, that, I mean, again, he's so quick. I mean, yes. The thing about it is, you know, I really, again, I think I've talked about this before. I like the interviews where they don't say, okay, here's what you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, no, I mean, it was like, did not ask me for what my questions were going to be. And I asked him a few questions. And again, it was such a limited time. I had to really try to make sure that I used the time as prudently as possible, because again, I would have loved to have had him for half an hour, 45 minutes or whatever. I was told 5 minutes. I was lucky to get 7 out of it. They didn't, you know, call me away about it, but no, I just thought he was, you know, as he was what you have seen so far in the first 6 weeks of this campaign. I thought he was personable. I thought he connected exceptionally well. I thought it was a, you know, sometimes I'm sure you've had these interviews where it's like you're like two ships going through the night, and it feels like he's not listening to you. He's going to answer the question any way he wants. But I thought he listened well, and I thought he responded well. I really enjoyed it. I really did.
Well, and obviously he understands the importance of Wausau. We've talked about how the Harris-Walz ticket is going to hit every media market in every battleground state this week alone, which would include Gwen Walz being at a debate watch party tonight in La Crosse, Tim Walz coming to Wausau on Friday. There is just so much attention being paid to the Wisconsin voter, you know, again, from both campaigns. You had Donald Trump visiting, you know, Mosinee over the weekend. It just, again, leads me to want to find those people who still don't know if they're going to vote and just grab them by the shoulders and go, what does it take for you to be a participant in this democracy?
And again, it's very smart, again, in terms of trying to get, where are the most votes available? And I think in a lot of ways, a place like Marathon County is. I saw a stat yesterday that talked about back in 2008, Barack Obama actually won a majority of the votes in Marathon County. The last two elections, Donald Trump won by about 18 points each time. That means there is the potential for growth for the Democratic ticket. And I think that's a very wise way to look at it. Yes, you need to maximize Madison and Milwaukee, but boy, there's a lot of votes available if you go out and get them in some of the rural parts of the state. And one of the topics that we talked about with Governor Walz last week was his background in a rural part of Minnesota, rural part of Nebraska, and the fact that he was able to win in a congressional district that won significantly were Republicans. So again, I just thought that I think that's a very wise way to look at the state of Wisconsin in terms of winning those electoral votes.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much that you can do, like you said, in the big cities. And I think that's an advantage of all of the fundraising that they've done, is that they can now make more of these personal appearances, which do matter in the long run. So Chad will be talking more about that at 98.9 WXCO coming up at 8 o'clock this morning. Chad, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too, guys.
Mr. Bach, anything to preview for Matt and Air on Air, you and Jane, in 2 hours?
Oh, yeah. At 10:33, we got the brand new host of the conveniently named Dom Salvia show today join us. Dom Salvia will be here talking to us about the new show and just what's going on in life, as well as Kristen Alfheim, who is running for state senate here in Wisconsin at 11:06.
Who I graduated with.
That's great, Chad. No one asked you.
tomorrow on the program, Congressman Mark Pocan joins us along with Elizabeth Montemurro from Up North News. Thanks to today's guests, Hans Breitmoser, Sherita Booker, and Chad Holmes, who is now playing under protest. Up North News, Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow morning up north.
This is 93.5 The Tap. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. It's Tuesday. That means what's grinding our gears. We'll ask you what's worse and so much more. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Native American issues are human issues. Join Robert Pilot with Native Roots for their program Awake at their new time of Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. Awake is proudly sponsored by Wisconsin Community Health Representatives.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Talk of Eau Claire, 93.5 The Tap, and on the Civic Media app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app. CBS.